Join the conversation on Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron. Text 580-580 right now.
Hello, hello. Happy Tuesday. Welcome back to the show. Lots to talk about today. We're going to talk about the cost of groceries and members of Parliament getting ready to grill the CEOs of the biggest grocery store chains this week. That is happening at a House of Commons committee. We have an update on the Orleans explosion. Apparently, now we're finding out it was a botched break-in. Somebody trying to steal water heaters who left the natural gas line open when he left. And Katie Griffin will join us in about 10 minutes from now with an update on that. But I want to start the show today with the big topic, and we were playing the waiting game at the end of the show. I thought yesterday, Danny, we were going to be off the air by the time the Prime Minister finally came out.
Yes, I thought that too, because the last time this happened,
the show was off the air.
Yes. And
but he came out around 5:50 yesterday, and we were able to dip into that news conference a bit. Being on time, not his strong suit, but we did get that announcement yesterday. The question is it enough? Amid all of the pressure, a push for a public inquiry from the NDP, from the Conservatives, from many people who are critical, rightly so, about the government, wanting to know what the government knew, when it knew it, and more about these allegations of Chinese election interference, is it enough for you? Already we've heard swift reaction from the Conservative leader, Pierre Poilievre, that he says it's not. What are we talking about? The Prime Minister says he's going to appoint a special rapporteur on election interference. What is that exactly? A consultant, a person TBD, to be determined, not named yet, somebody who can come in with a mandate to make expert recommendations on combating interference to strengthen our democracy. Here's what he said last night.
We will ask the independent special rapporteur as one of the first tasks of their mandate to provide the government with a recommendation as to what the appropriate next step should be, whether it be an inquiry, an investigation, or a judicial review, and what the scope of that work may be.
A rapporteur is a fancy way of putting this off. That's what it is. It's a half step. It's a way to say, I hear you, I'm listening. He's trying to respond to calls for an inquiry by doing this, but it's pushing it to two committees, a special rapporteur, a fancy name for a consultant to come in. But will the key questions be answered? That's what I want to know. How long is this going to take? Will we find out more about these allegations? Who is it going to be? Did the Prime Minister know the Chinese government was trying to influence the election by supporting certain candidates? By benefiting Liberal candidates? Why were the nomination papers signed? What did they know? How did they find that information out? This was all reported to us by the Globe and Mail thanks to very important high-level top-secret documents. And the Prime Minister, unfortunately, seems more concerned about the fact that those have been leaked to the media. What does it say that such high-level important documents were leaked to members of the media in the first place? It shows there's a grave level of concern. So now we will have a rapporteur. Is it enough for you? Here's Pierre Poilievre, leader of the opposition, saying this falls short of what they are asking for. He believes there still needs to be a public inquiry to get to the heart of the matter. And he's concerned that whoever is appointed to this position, whoever becomes this consultant, is going to be in favor of the Liberal Party, that they're going to be a Liberal insider.
Conservatives want exactly the opposite of closed and controlled. We want open and independent. An open, independent, public inquiry to get to the truth and make sure it never happens again. We need to bring home control of our democracy.
Pierre Poilievre is dismissing the Prime Minister's vow that this person will be independent. The Prime Minister said on whoever is going to be appointed to this position that he's open to consulting with the opposition parties, that he'll talk to them. The Conservatives are not happy with this, even though he said that he's happy to chat with them on naming the special rapporteur. Pierre Poilievre is skeptical, and he's shutting that down. He says he doesn't have much faith that the Prime Minister will pick someone completely independent.
Of course he could pick someone independent, but he won't. He'll pick another Liberal establishment insider, a real Ottawa insider with some gray hair who looks like a reasonable fellow, but we all know that it will be someone tied to him, tied to the Liberals.
Well, in Kingston today, the Prime Minister, Justin Trudeau, responded to those remarks.
The impact and the threat of foreign interference we've seen in all sorts of different elections around the world. And it is upon all of us as leaders to ensure that even as we are strengthening our capacity as democracies and as institutions to respond to that, that we're not falling into the trap of actually weakening Canadians' confidence in those institutions by leaning in heavily on partisan accusations.
How do you see it? Is it a half measure? Is it a baby step? Is it an improvement? Is it a distraction? Is it a drinking game? Somebody just texted in, Chris in Kanata, let's play a drinking game every time the Liberals say rapporteur. Take a shot. I'm already drunk. Jeff, the grumpy Uber driver. Hi, Christy. Last night, my partner and I were having a major disagreement about what we were going to have for dinner. It was pretty bad, but we decided to hire a special rapporteur, and everything turned out amazing. I recommend that everybody should get their own special rapporteur. Their lives will never be the same again.
I think people are having a lot of fun with this.
They're already having fun.
Awesome. I love it.
Oh, Ottawa Now family. I do love your wicked and twisted sense of humor. Clearly, they're not impressed.
No.
But they're using humor as a way to deal with it. Anonymous in Embrun. The Prime Minister is clearly more worried about the leak than the fact Canadians want an independent inquiry. I feel he's got something to hide. Text in and let us know. The Bloc Québécois leader, Yves-François Blanchet, said the special rapporteur should be appointed by Parliament, not by the Prime Minister. And what do you think about the Prime Minister's offer? That he said, I'll consult with the opposition parties. Pierre Poilievre says, no, you won't. Won't be somebody independent. Does that hearten you at all? Does that change your understanding or your position on this? Here's the leader of the Bloc Québécois.
So the person that would be choose for however we do name the function would have to create confidence from the population. It would have to be determined to go to the bottom of things, including possibly hurt the pride of some actual politicians.
Here's the leader of the NDP, Jagmeet Singh, who is still calling for a public inquiry.
Around different ethnic communities being overly identified with those kinds of things. So do you support that idea or you oppose it?
The idea of a registry is an idea that might have some benefit, but it's not the solution on its own. What's clear here is that we need a more wholesome and or a more thorough analysis of a more fulsome, I should say, more thorough analysis of what went wrong, what happened, and how we can fix it. And part of the benefit of a public inquiry would be those recommendations. What can we actually do that will concretely protect our democracy? And while there is some merit to the idea of a registry and identifying who are foreign agents, I'm not at all convinced that that would be enough to protect our democracy.
He's commenting there on the Prime Minister, who said the government will launch public consultations to create what he called a foreign influence transparency registry. And he just ended his news conference there, but you heard a small snippet of the NDP leader Jagmeet Singh. We'll take a short break. 2:17 on Ottawa Now. A look at time saver traffic and weather. When we come back after Matt Scooby, Katie Griffin will join us by phone. She's got the latest on the Orleans explosion and how it all began with the theft of water heaters. That's next.
Take us with you on your Apple CarPlay or Android Auto through your iHeartRadio app. It's Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
You know, loud crash, and then we wake up, the ceiling's kind of like falling down on us. Our whole back of our house is just gone. I got the ceiling like off of us, got my wife and the baby out. I scooped the dog, and then we were able to grab my other son whose bedroom's in the front of the house.
That is Ian Carlson, Orleans resident, whose house was badly damaged during the Orleans explosion last month, speaking with CTV Ottawa. And you remember he was on our show. He got out. His family got out okay. Thank goodness they had just moved their little baby into their bed minutes before this happened and the ceiling caved in. There have been so many questions since the Orleans explosion. One of the key questions being, what happened? How did this begin? And today we have more answers, new details suggesting the blast is linked to the theft of water heaters. Katie Griffin, CTV Ottawa news reporter, joins us now. Katie, what can you tell us?
Well, Christy, new court documents that were filed after Cody Crosby appeared in court kind of lay out the police allegations as to what may have happened. So the court documents say that sometime on February 12th, which was the first or the day before the explosion happened, they allege that someone broke into two homes on Blossom Pass Terrace, stole water heaters, and then as a result, the natural gas line was left open. And of course, that then ignited, causing the explosion on the morning of February 13th. So that's where they're getting that from. Now, if you remember, quite early on after this happened, the president of Minto, the company that is building the homes in this subdivision, had said that they believe that a natural gas leak was to blame for this. And so as a result, Crosby, who's 35 years old, he's facing a dozen charges.
Wow. To think all of this began with theft of something like that, Katie, I mean, it's pretty wild. Have you heard from any of the people impacted by the explosion today and their reaction to this news?
Not today, but certainly I think early on when police had come out to say that it was a criminal act that caused this, that was their theory, you know, the reaction was just shock and outrage. And, you know, people were, at one point, they were just trying to figure out exactly what was next, right? They hadn't really had a lot of time to process what happened. And then to think that, you know, this was a criminal act, just imagine how they would have felt with that. So police, this is them kind of laying out their case in the documents that were filed with the court. He is back in court next week. We did reach his lawyer yesterday, who said she didn't want to comment, just citing that the charges were still before the court. And it's very, obviously, very early on in this case. But yeah, the court documents just certainly just paint a picture of what police say happened. And of course, we'll find more information about this as this develops through the court.
Thank you, Katie.
Thanks.
Katie Griffin, CTV Ottawa news reporter. So this is what they meant when they came out and they said this was criminal in nature. Everybody was wondering what exactly that meant. Now through court documents, we learn that the natural gas supply open was later ignited, but this began when somebody allegedly went in and stole the water heaters. It is 2:26 on the show. Many text messages coming in about the Prime Minister. Let's talk grocery stores and prices next. I'm very interested to see what questions members of Parliament will come up with when they get to speak with the head of Loblaw, Metro, and Empire. There's going to be a big push here for more transparency, and rightly so, to talk about the high cost of food, to get greater clarity at a time when grocery stores are making record profits, and the assurances from them have not sat well with many Canadians. In fact, they have a bit of indigestion from hearing, no, that's from the pharmacy part of the store. No, that's from the cosmetics. That's from the perfume. That's from the other stuff we sell. Not from food prices. Of course, running a grocery store and a corporation is complicated business. And we've had a lot of things happening around the world. We've had inflation. We've had the war in Ukraine. We've had supply chains that have been interrupted. Grocery stores have said, we're passing along supply chain costs to customers. It's not profiteering. We'll get another take coming up next. An economist with Canadians for Tax Fairness is on the other side.
Welcome back to Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
One of the things the MPs could ask is whether the grocery store chains will all commit to providing full access to their books to the Competition Bureau during its investigation that's set to report out in June. Of course, the Competition Bureau cannot compel the grocery stores to do that, but the grocery stores can volunteer additional information.
That's David McDonald, senior economist at the Canadian Centre for Policy Alternatives, chatting with the Canadian Press about food prices and members of parliament getting ready to grill the heads of Canada's largest grocery stores. Welcome back to the show. I know many of you will be paying close attention to this House of Commons committee tomorrow when this happens. The CEOs and presidents of these big companies, including Metro, Empire Limited, and Loblaw, are all going to testify. And many of you are complaining about the cost of food and how unaffordable it's become. Somebody just said, I just came out of Walmart shopping for food. Many things up just since last week. It feels like we're in a position right now where you need to buy everything today or it's just going to cost you more tomorrow. This will be a big opportunity to push for more transparency. Why are grocers making so much money? And what is the cost breakdown? To talk about the high cost of food, to get greater clarity on that, to talk about profits, what are the profits in? What is food versus cosmetics versus stuff in the drugstore? Joining us right now, D.T. Cochran is on the line, economist with Canadians for Tax Fairness. Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Thank you for coming on the show. I'm looking forward to this tomorrow. I've got a lot of big questions, but what are you going to be watching for?
I'm going to be watching for how forthright these CEOs are about what their job actually is. Their job is not providing food to Canadians. Their job is getting the most profit they can for their shareholders. To do that, they control all of the food that we need to access, and they're designed to make sure they squeeze as much money out of us as they possibly can. The pandemic has shown that that's what they do, and it's costing all of us.
So would it be fair to ask them for a better rundown, more transparency of exactly what their profits are? What is in the grocery store aisle versus what is in the drugstore? What is perfume and what is tomatoes?
Absolutely. Their approach to pricing is quite complex. You know, they have all of these reward programs and they'll have their big blowout sales where they tout how cheap things are. And all of this is designed to get us into the stores, spending as much money as possible on the highest margin items. And we need much more transparency about how all of this is being done and where the costs to Canadians are really being borne. My main concern is that because they have access to all of these numbers and they have access to incredibly creative spin doctors, they're going to try to bamboozle us with all sorts of numbers that put them in the best possible light. And I think Canadians just won't stand for it.
They say we've had a global pandemic, we've had the war in Ukraine, we've had rolling production shutdowns by major trade partners like China. We're here. We're between a rock and a hard place. We're passing along supply chain costs to customers. We're not profiteering. In your personal opinion, how much of it is that, those world events and things beyond our control, versus them jacking up the prices?
Well, we don't even have to rely on my personal opinion. We can just go look at their financial reports. And it's true, they have had higher costs. We can see how much their costs have increased. But then we can also see what their markup is over those costs. So for example, in 2019, Loblaw's markup over costs was about 45.5%. In 2021, it was almost 47%. Now that might not seem like a big jump, but if they had the 2019 markup in 2021, it would have saved Canadians almost $900 million. And that's just Loblaw's.
How does the government approach this? How can they regulate it or fix it? Is it about creating an environment in Canada with more competition?
There are lots of regulatory options. Everything needs to be on the table. We have to start confronting the fact that these grocery chains have become incredibly powerful and they have a lot of control over something that Canadians have a right to, which is food. So we need to explore all of those regulatory options. That's a longer term thing. In the immediate term, we're advocating for a windfall profits tax. These companies hugely benefited from the money that the government provided to Canadians to support us in the early days of the pandemic. A lot of that money wound up becoming their profits. So these huge profits aren't because they're innovative or newly efficient. This is just an outcome of the government supporting Canadians. So we should be taxing that money back to the public.
Mm, yeah. So the thing is, as a consumer, which you just alluded to, we have limited power. There's only so much that we can do. We can download different discount apps on our phone. We can look for good bargains, and we can hunt from different store to different store. But at the end of it, it's a choice of I'm either buying the item or I'm not. And that's pretty much it.
Well, and a lot of our choice is just an illusion, because these companies all control multiple brand name stores. So we might think we're moving from one company to another, but we're just moving to a different brand name of the same company that, again, is all designed to get as much money out of us as they possibly can.
In your proposed tax that you were just talking about, where would the money go to? If we had revenue coming in from a windfall tax, where would that be directed?
So because of the way our food system works, there's not an immediate answer for making food more affordable to Canadians, but the government can do other things to make our life more affordable. So they could actually create the PharmaCare program that has been promised. They could implement a universal dental care program. These are things that cost Canadians money right now out of our pockets, and we could have the government providing that sort of good to make sure that Canadians have access to other essential services.
Is that too complicated? Some people will scrutinize that idea and say it's not going to work.
I mean, governing is complicated. We fought World War II, and I don't think this situation is more complicated than that. That took government leadership. This requires government leadership.
Thanks for the time today.
Thank you very much for having me.
D.T. Cochran, who's an economist. He's with Canadians for Tax Fairness, that organization. You can text into the show and talk to me about being squeezed at the grocery store, about food prices, about the House of Commons committee, which will see Empire Company Limited. They own stores including Sobeys and Farm Boy. Loblaw will be there. Metro will be there. And for the first time, they will be making an appearance, a long overdue appearance in many people's opinions. And they'll have to answer on this. And I think there will be some very tough and pointed questions. 2:46.
Take us with you on your Apple CarPlay or Android Auto through your iHeartRadio app. It's Ottawa Now with Christy Cameron on News Talk 580 CFRA and the iHeartRadio Talk Network.
2:52, welcome back. New research finds that face blindness probably affects as many as 3% of the world's population. That is significantly more people than initially believed. Through previous research, they thought it was only about 2 to 2.5% of people. And this comes to us through research done at Harvard Medical School. It is behind this research. Joining us right now on the line, I've got an associate professor of psychiatry at Harvard, Dr. Joe DeGutis. Thank you for coming on the program today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
What is face blindness?
Yeah, so face blindness is the inability to, perceive and recognize faces. And this is a disorder that has been described for probably about 80 years, and it's usually acquired through a brain injury. But actually, in the last 20 or 30 years, we've appreciated that this can also be a genetic or a lifelong developmental disorder. And this is what we've kind of found is, this developmental version of face blindness is much more common and can affect as many as 3% of the population. And it's one of those things where it's hard to become aware of it, but it actually is pretty prevalent out in the population.
Yeah. And I just want to stress for our listeners, this is beyond being bad at recognizing people, because there may be listeners saying, oh, yeah, I'm really bad with names. Oh, I'm actually bad with faces. I had a professor back in university who had this, and he would tell the class, because he didn't want students to take offense, you'd be with him for the entire year and he wouldn't recognize you and you'd have to say your name coming up to him. This can be very difficult for people to live with.
Absolutely. So, you know, we find that especially at work where you have these kind of acquaintances. So, I mean, if you have your friends and you're like, oh, you know, and you misrecognize them or you can't recognize them, you can tell them or you can kind of communicate with them. But at work, we find that, like, we've had people who are, you know, investment bankers who they're really bad at networking, or we have had physicians who have this, who they're like, I can't recognize my patients, or teachers who can't recognize their students. So especially in work settings, it can be pretty debilitating and cause, you know, anxiety. And yeah, I think that there are some people that really, especially the more severe forms of it, it can really kind of affect their employment and their everyday life quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Typically, what age are people diagnosed with this?
Oh, yeah, that's a really great question, because what we found in one of our studies is that people don't become aware that they even have this until they're in their 20s. So especially in your adolescence, they would just say, oh, I think I'm inattentive, or I'm not paying attention, or I'm not trying very hard. And, you know, in your 20s is when you get feedback about, like, oh, wow, that person just recognized me and I didn't recognize them. You start to kind of put the connect the pieces together and actually become aware that you kind of have this disorder. So a lot of times our participants have lived most of their adolescence without any awareness that they have this, or they've attributed it to other things. And, you know, like, you know how well you perform in math because you get feedback in school, or how well you are at sports, but social kind of interactions and social cognition, we don't get that much feedback, especially when we're younger.
That must be so frustrating, as you said, because you're beating yourself up about it. I need to pay closer attention. I need to try and memorize the way that person's face looks, but you just can't.
Exactly, exactly. And I think a lot of the people that we diagnose, they go back and they're like, oh my God, my childhood makes so much more sense
right
now, because I understand. I wasn't aloof. I would walk by people and they'd be like, geez, why'd they just walk by and ghost me? But they actually have face blindness. They have prosopagnosia.
Wow. Okay. And so where do you want to continue on with this research?
Oh man. So we are, you know, continuing on lots of different directions, but one of them, kind of going back to this adolescent issue, is we would love to diagnose it earlier so we can, like, help people either compensate, or they can kind of make it through adolescence a little more smoothly. So that's one of the things that we want to focus on. The other angle of it is we've been developing some new treatments. One is focusing on, like, how people perceive faces. And, you know, lots of times prosopagnosics don't kind of either, you know, aren't very good at processing the eye region, and they also don't put the face together into a gestalt or a whole as much. So we want to train that process. We're also doing some training with memory training. So the last couple of months, we've had some very promising results along those lines.
Thanks for the time today, Doctor.
Okay, thanks so much. Have a great day.
Dr. Joe DeGutis, you as well, Associate Professor of Psychiatry at Harvard, talking about face blindness. 2:58, we're about 2 minutes away from your news. On the other side, concerns from the conservatives trying to stop the expansion of medically assisted death to people who are suffering from mental illness. And we'll chat with one doctor on the show who's very worked up about it. In fact, he has said in the media he'll walk away as chair of his hospital's medical assistance and dying team if this program is eventually opened up to people dealing solely with mental illness. That is how strongly he feels about this. And he's also the chief of psychiatry at Toronto's Humber River Hospital. He's on the other side of your 3 p.m. news.